Good morning. I'm Lynn Ford. I'm especially excited about this week's mid-morning shows because Dr. Ann Kaltz will be live in the studio with us on Thursday, October 1st. She's speaking that evening at 7 at the Grand Wayne Center, a night sponsored by Parkview Health. Now, I am not a salesperson. Any store that I worked for would tell you that, but it's easy for me to promote things that I truly believe in. Supporting WBCL financially during Share, that's on the list. And so is Dr. Ann. Randomly poll any group of adults about what's important to them, and good health lands in the top five. For some, health begins with losing weight, and Dr. Ann will address that. But she'll also share the science behind food and lifestyle choices as medicine. That's the way our bodies are designed. What you and your family eat dramatically affects what's going on with that ginormous colony of bacteria in your gut, the death rate of brain cells, and the creation of new ones, and if bad or good genes get switched on. On any given day of the week, that means the grade your child gets on his math test, your resiliency in the morning as you get up and face the stress of caring for your aging parents, lowering your blood pressure, having enough energy at the end of the day to, and you fill in the blank for that. Tickets are $15 each, $20 at the door if we don't sell out. Get them at WBCL.org or by calling 745-0576. Dr. Ann, this Thursday, 7 o'clock, the Grand Wayne Center. You can check out the complete list of lineups of guests for this week on Mid-Morning by going to the weekly schedule page. That's WBCL.org. Click on Programs and then Mid-Morning. 90.3 WBCL thanks you for your financial support and the area businesses that team with you, like Dr. Carl Myers of Indiana Vision Development Center in Fort Wayne, specializing in vision problems which interfere with reading and learning. Find out more on our business partners page at WBCL.org. When Mid-Morning receives two books at the same time on the same topic we want to discuss, we pick one to feature and put the other in our book giveaway. But when Jay Pathick's The Art of Neighboring and Amy Lively's How to Love Your Neighbor Without Being Weird arrived, I couldn't choose because both beautifully and powerfully convey, one, the command to love your neighbor as yourself, two, why we shy away from this, and three, practical ways to actually do it. So this morning, we're chatting with both, beginning with Jay Pathick. We'll give away two copies of each book near the end of each interview, so be ready to call 260-745-9090 when we open the lines. When Jesus said that all the commandments can be summed up in loving God and loving our neighbors as ourselves, he was on to something, says Jay Pathick. So what would happen if we all just did what Jesus said to do? What if we get to know our actual neighbors? This sounds really simple, but it's easy to miss. Ask Jay, because he's the author of The Art of Neighboring, but he and a group of 20 lead pastors met with their mayor to think, dream, and pray about how their churches might join forces to serve the community, confronting issues that most communities face: at-risk kids, areas with dilapidated housing, child hunger, loneliness, elderly shut-ins, and more. So after a lengthy discussion, so these 20 pastors and the mayor says this: the majority of the issues that our community is facing would be eliminated or drastically reduced if we could just figure out a way to become a community of great neighbors. So picture it, this group of pastors asking the mayor how they and their fellow Christians could serve the city, and he basically tells them that it would be really great if they could get their people to obey the second half of the Great Commandment. Big gulp in the room. I am grateful and delighted that Jay Pathick is with us this morning to tell us what happened next. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning. Yeah, that was quite a moment for us.
Yeah, so what was the next step? First of all, take us back to you being in that room, and you heard the mayor basically telling you something that you know in your heart that you've read many, many times.
Yeah, you know, you set up a room like that for a bunch of different reasons. I mean, You're trying to connect with other pastors, and you're trying to connect with the heart of the city. And, you know, he was totally unscripted, so we weren't sure what was going to happen. And he said a number of the things you would expect him to say, you know, around, you know, elderly shut-ins and youth problems. And sort of that last bit was almost just off the cuff. He kind of folded up his paper and said, I was thinking on the way here, what if we could be a community of great neighbors?
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty quiet in the room, as you might imagine. And finally, I mustered up the courage to say to our group, I think the mayor of our city just asked us to obey Jesus. So the mayor said to a group of pastors, why don't you try to get your people to do the thing that Jesus said is the most important thing, the thing that sums up everything else. So it was a pretty shocking moment.
The next step then was what, Jay?
Well, we really just prayed to start. Because, you know, when you're shocked like that, you're not really sure what to do. And so we prayed for a bit, and we gathered together again. And this time, we met with our assistant city manager, a woman named Vicki Ryer, just an incredible kind of saint of our city. And she gave us the next blast that we weren't expecting, where she said, you know, from the city's perspective, there really isn't a difference between the way that Christians and non-Christians love their actual neighbors. And she went on to tell us all the different great statistics that different sociologists have been studying about neighboring, how if you know your neighbors, you spend time with them, you live longer, your neighborhood is safer, on and on and on. Just went through all of these interesting statistics about how our lives can be changed. And it was then that as a group of pastors, we thought, we got to get into action. We got to do something. And so we preached a series of messages challenging our people to think about their literal neighbors. Because, you know, we've taken that word neighbor and turned it into a metaphor. Mm-hmm. So that everyone that we come across that's in need, well, that's somebody that is our neighbor. And that's true. I mean, Jesus says that, actually, in the Good Samaritan parable. But that doesn't mean that our literal neighbors are any less our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And we started to realize as we engaged our own lives, let alone the lives of the people in our churches, that most of us, well, we didn't even know their names, let alone have meaningful relationships.
Well, let's stick with that for just a moment, because you have what you tongue-in-cheek call the chart of shame, and I failed it. And I took the test when I read the book, The Art of Neighboring, and failed miserably. So I will just say that. In fact, I am probably one of the worst neighbors on my street. There are houses and people that live in those houses that they every night when the weather is good, so even into November, and if there's a nice day in December, they meet in somebody's driveway. Everybody brings a chair and sits, and they've done this for years. And so there's a core group of about four, but there can be up to 10 people who do this.
Right.
And they just sit and talk. I am not one of them. I have failed this miserably. So walk us through the chart of shame, which really is not a chart of shame. It's sort of the chart of opening your eyes to see what you know about your neighbors.
That's nice of you. Yeah. So, you know, in our church community, you know, use this multiple times in a year to sort of reawaken our awareness of our neighbors. And it's been, as you said, called tongue-in-cheek, the chart of shame, because it does reveal things pretty quickly. You know, mm-hmm. It kind of takes some concepts and makes it concrete really quickly. So, you know, if you could just imagine a tic-tac-toe board, you know, pretty simple. So you have three rows of three boxes, and imagine that your home is in the middle. So you could just write your street address in there. That's where you live. And think of it like a Google imaging satellite map. So all the houses around your house are your neighbors. Those are the people that live near you. And maybe even as you're listening now, there's different people listening. Just try this in your mind, or it's even worth pulling out a piece of paper and trying it. Just write the names of your neighbors in each of those boxes at the top of each box. Just write the names of your neighbors. And then after you've done that, take some time and maybe write in the middle of each box some things you know about them. You know, like is a lawyer, is from Idaho, something like that. it can't be something that you've observed, like has yellow flowers, mm-hmm. drives a red car. That's cheating. You're not allowed to do that. Because it needs to be something that you've learned by way of a conversation. And then in the bottom of each box, write something about their heart. Their deeper interests, their dreams, their hopes, their fears, maybe their regrets, maybe even their spiritual condition. What do they think about God? What do they think life's about? And see if you can fill in each of the boxes in all three layers. Now, different people do different things when we go through this. Sometimes people say, well, that's not what my neighborhood looks like. You know, I have a park behind my house, so, you know, the chart doesn't work, so I guess I'm out. No, listen, don't be legalist. Just pick, you know, the eight closest homes to your home. So, you know, feel free to adjust it as you see fit. Now, as we do this with people, really all over the world, it's interesting to watch how people experience this, because most people, well, they can't even name their neighbors. They don't know their names. Frankly, it's not just that they don't know their names. They probably couldn't pick them out of a lineup. If they bumped into them on the street somewhere, they wouldn't even know that they were the neighbors. And this is it's really a modern phenomenon, because we get in our car all the time to build relationships now. Mm-hmm. I mean, even those of us who are in ministry, we usually get in our cars to go and do ministry, to go help people, to go connect with people elsewhere. And when we don't know the names of our neighbors, and this is a pretty deep theological thought, it's hard to love people when you don't know their names. Hmm. Meaning, maybe the first step in loving someone is to know their name. And this can be awkward, especially if you've lived somewhere for like 20 years, right? Like, I've seen that guy, you know, who's mowing his lawn, and it's like, hey, bro, what's up, man? And there's a big difference between hi, Bob, and hey, man. Mm-hmm. There's a huge difference. I mean, just think about how it feels when someone knows and retains your name. It really means something. It shows that they've taken an interest in you, that you're sort of worthwhile to them. And when Jesus talks about being a great neighbor, the lowest kind of definition of a neighbor should be, well, the people that live closest to us. Mm-hmm. So when we walk through this, it's not intended to bring shame, like you said. I mean, though it might feel that way, it's really intending to bring conviction. Mm-hmm. And when we've done this in our network here in our city and in, you know, just over 60 cities now around the country, we hand out those little block maps as a magnet. And so when people put that on their refrigerator, it just stares at them, you know, every day. Those blank squares just staring at you, beckoning you, saying, why don't you know my name? And then, of course, the reason why we go through those different layers is it's more than just knowing someone's name. Then you get to know some of the details about their life. And those are the kinds of things that start to knit your heart to people. You begin to pray and look for ways that you can spend more time together. And, of course, in the end, for those of us that love and follow Jesus, we believe that Jesus offers a way of life now, not just when we die. He gives us the best kind of life now. And so it's hard to talk about deeper things when we don't really know people mm-hmm. deeply. And so as we get to know people, we get to share some of the different parts of our heart about what life's about, how they're raising their kids, and why they do the work that they do, and maybe even some of their regrets in life and what they hope for. And it's in these deeper things that, well, conversations about Jesus, well, they're really easy to have. And ultimately, if we follow Jesus, we believe that, well, that's part of what our life's about, is to help people know about the life we've discovered in.
When you discuss this, and as you write about it in your book, The Art of Neighboring, you address the things that would be the concerns of your fellow Christian audience. So that would be fear, and it would be time. But what you're saying to us in a very gentle, firm way, which Jesus would do if he were speaking to us about these things, and he would tell us a story too, is, my dear brother and sister, this isn't an option. This is the way of life that I'm calling you to. You know, the way of life that I'm calling you to is different than the schedule that the world keeps. It's different than the schedule that you sort of set for yourself. It's loving things that are different than the natural tendency is to love. And I'm speaking to myself here because these books are really hard to read, both yours and Amy's this morning. And so you tackle those things head on. So let's talk about time, because you address it in a really, I think, helpful way. When somebody says, you're asking me to take on more, and I'm trying to love and serve first my own family because they're my first responsibility, and that includes my parents, and that, you know, if you're a sandwich generation person. So really, I'm afraid of the time this is going to take. I can't be responsible for anybody else.
Yeah. Well, and if there is a sickness of our culture for those that are following Jesus, it is hurry and busyness. I don't know anyone that thinks that they have some extra time. You know, when we talk about getting to know and loving your literal neighbors, it's not like anyone hears that and thinks, oh, I was wondering what to do with these extra 10 hours of my week.
Look what I found.
I don't know anybody thinking that. So we realize that we're creating some problems here. And frankly, it's worse than that. The kind of thing we're talking about being relationship building, it really only works if you have margin to be able to build relationships. Relationships aren't the kinds of things that just happen, you know, really efficiently. You know, they require that you have some space to adapt and react to the rhythms of other people's lives. Yeah, in other words, it's hard to schedule like building a great friendship and investing an hour a week on a Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m., right? Mm-hmm. You know, relationships require a certain fluidity and flexibility that are, frankly, even difficult to schedule. But if Jesus says that all the law and the prophets are summed up in this, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And then he takes that definition of neighbor, and he says it stretches all the way to an enemy who's in need. What we're talking about with literal neighbors is sort of the kindergarten version of the Great Commandment. It means that Jesus thinks this is really important and that we all have to make some simple steps. And the truth is, time is one of those difficult constants that God trusts you with. I don't know about you, but one of the most terrifying thoughts of my life is that God trusts me with my life. He gives me my time and says, you can steward it as you see fit. And the way we invest our time determines almost every other key component of our life, from our relationships to our money. There isn't a commodity more important than how you spend your time. And we do all kinds of goofy things to make us feel better about the way we're thinking about our time. We say, oh, well, just after this season, you know, once we get through the fall, you know, kids mm-hmm. just started school. And, you know, it's been a busy time at work. And once we get to the new year, well, then things are going to slow down. Or once I get through this little stage of my kids' lives, you know, once we get them into school, or once they get through school, once they graduate high school, once we get them off to college, once I get a chance to retire, then I'll have time. And we always are thinking as though sometime in the future, we're going to have margin. And we're going to be able to do the things that we need to do in order to follow God and to take his commandments seriously. Mm-hmm. And listen, I'm sure you have all listeners of all different ages. If you talk to anyone a stage ahead of you, they will tell you you are lying to yourself. I mean, when I talk to single people and they say, oh, I am so busy. You have no idea how busy I am. I just think, wow, okay. Well, just wait until you get married, and then you'll learn some things about business. And then you talk to married people without kids. They say, oh, I am so busy. If they talk to a married couple with their first baby, that married couple looks at them and says, you have so much time. You have no idea how much time you have. And then they also say, travel, more travel. And then if you talk to a married couple with kids who are suddenly in elementary school, you have soccer, you have this and that. I could keep going. Every stage you enter into, you look backward and realize you had more margin than you realized. You had more opportunity to not just be passive in your life, but be active and prioritize it. And frankly, this stuff with neighboring enhances your life more than you could imagine. You get to build deeper relationships. And just imagine if every believer in your city loved and served the people nearest to them. If everyone took this seriously, the exponential effect in our cities would be difficult to measure. The ways that we would take on addiction and divorce rates, it would be magnificent what the Church of Jesus Christ could do if we would all just make this one simple step.
The problems that we read about in the paper or online or hear on the news that feel so overwhelming, we think, what can I do? What one thing can I do? Won't make any difference. Your book and Amy's book say, you know, there is something that you can do, and it's in your own neighborhood, and it will make a difference in the now, but it'll make a huge difference in the future.
It will, and you know, the overwhelming thought that I've had, and we've had, Dave Runyon, my co-author, and I've realized as we keep thinking about this, is it might just be that Jesus is a genius. It just could be, you know, like it's not like he's suggesting something to just interrupt your busy life. It's possible that he's really, really smart. And he knows that if everyone that follows him would take this seriously, it would take on all the major issues of our culture and our day. Because it would just spiderweb out across our cities. And frankly, this is a way that we get to work out how real our faith is in, like, the real world, in real time. You know, I've always heard and taught that, you know, true discipleship, true growth in your life with God happens in, like, the context of a small group. And I think that's true. It, compared to attending a big meeting, a small group is definitely helpful. But the real laboratory of our faith is our neighborhoods. If the faith that we have in Jesus truly changes our lives, changes families, changes the way that we live, and we try it out in the real world within a context, a neighborhood, where that we get to see people day in and day out and live life with them and watch their kids grow up and be a part of city issues, from elections to even small little spats around, like, whose tree is growing over into someone else's property, or every neighborhood has a barking dog, right? You know, it's an opportunity for us to see how our faith in Jesus truly impacts the lives of the people that surround us. And in the little bit of time that we've been challenging people in the context of local churches and all over the country, we've been seeing some effect. We've been seeing that, well, God, well, he seems to bless this when we take seriously getting to know our neighbors.
When we ask the Lord to change us so that we can love how he loves, it isn't a dump from the Holy Spirit, a full dump. It happens progressively in the living out of our lives. And I think one of the stories in your book that dramatically illustrates that is your friend who had a house on his street that the garage door was falling off its hinges. It was such a mess, and it really bothered him. And so he called code enforcement. And what he learned later about the person who lived in that house changed everything for him.
That's right. I mean, yeah, there's always a story, isn't there? Mm-hmm. There's always a story.
And we tend to go to the worst case scenario about that person and who they are, what they do, because we don't know.
That's right. I mean, there's always a story, and we sadly tend to kick these things into the system instead of, well, figure out a way that we can engage. I mean, right now, on about every street in America, there's a marriage that's on the verge of a divorce. It doesn't matter what your neighborhood's like. It doesn't matter if it's a gated community or if it's apartment complex. Right now, on every street in America, there's someone battling with an addiction. Right now, on every street in America, well, there's probably somebody in major financial crisis. They might be living in a multi-million dollar home, or they might be in a pretty modest accommodation. But it's somebody that's feeling the pressure. There's someone on your street, my street, whose parents are getting sick. And they're trying to battle through, should I have them move in? Do I travel to help them move into a home? And some of the ways those things evidence is, you know, their lawn's not cut. Their house isn't painted quite right. It's little things that start to surface that show the cracks of a family on the outside of their home. And it takes time and commitment to connect with people to discover, oh, that's not just a drug house over there. That's a couple who went through a horrible divorce, and the mom is so depressed she can't get out of bed, and the kids are taking over the home. I mean, there's always a story if we take the time to connect and hear about what's happening around us.
Before I let you go, Jay, there was a story that you told on yourself that your wife invited. You had Bible study in your home, but there was one night when your wife invited, you lived in an apartment, the neighbors to come, and you weren't all too thrilled about that. But one of the comments that you heard in the discussion was that your neighbors noticed 30 people coming in and out of your house once a week, and they heard music and laughter, and they wondered what they were missing out on.
Yeah, that was the worst. I mean, because, you know, I was a professional Christian, right? I mean, I'm paid.
You're paid to help people on, but off the clock, a little different.
Sadly, it was. And I think it is for a lot of us. You know, when you're doing pastoral ministry as a way of life, you can start to think, gosh, when I get home, I just want to sit there. I just want to be quiet. And my wife went out of her way to invite our neighbors, and in the middle of, like, our normal Bible study time. And it was like, oh, no, you know, I barely mustered up the energy to see the Bible study folks, and now these other random people are here. And the worst was when they finally admitted to us, I mean, our neighbors said, hey, you know, we've watched people shuffle in and out of here every Wednesday, and we hear music, and we hear laughing. We've always wondered, how do we get invited to that party? I wonder if I'm ever going to be invited. And it was the worst because, you know, I was like paid in our church to try to help people connect and create environments where people could invite their friends to stuff we were doing as a church that they might hear about Jesus. And it was the worst realization that oh no, these people are all around me. And all it took was a little extra meat on the grill and a simple invitation to make a way for people to connect.
We'll wrap up with one more story from your book, The Art of Neighboring, but it has a lot of practical baby steps and going from stranger to acquaintance to relationship. Mm-hmm. And you also deal with this whole issue of boundaries because that's important as well. But one of the stories is a couple that they were really working on trying to figure out how to do a block party. And they were, you know, how's this going to come together and what are the details of it? And that was on the board to plan. But then they just decided one night they were going to cook s'mores in their backyard as a couple. And they decided, hey, well, you know, we'll go tell the neighbors were doing that. Everybody but two people in the neighborhood showed up. So the block party they were planning, great, but they had an impromptu block party. So it's we think so hard about the energy that goes into planning something big and detailed and structured, when what you're talking about is what's happening in the rhythm of today.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, most people are already doing things that your neighbors would love to participate with. I mean, right now, I'll make a guess about every neighborhood in America right now. This is a guess. That is that everybody in every neighborhood eats every day. How's that for a dramatic guess?
I don't know. I might have to push back on that.
and here, it's even weirder. They tend to eat around the same time. So all it takes is merging some of those eating spaces together a little. Right? It's also true for, like, sporting events. You know, here we're Broncos crazy. And it turns out that on any street, they're all watching the Broncos. And it's at the same time, because that's when the Broncos are playing. And if you could just make a few extra snacks and invite people, it's amazing how quickly they'll come. In other words, it's just what you said. It's not adding a whole bunch of other stuff. It's just saying, what am I already doing that makes for an easy way to connect with others? Because they're already doing it as well.
Yes. Jay Pathak, thank you so much for joining us today and for joining forces with Dave Runyon to write The Art of Neighboring, Building Genuine Relationships Right Outside Your Door. It's published by Baker Books, and we have two copies to give away right now to callers 4 and 5 who have the guts to pick up the phone right now and call and read this book. It will be different in a good way in the way that the Lord wants for you. I finished reading this book thinking, when Jesus says, take my yoke upon you, because it is easy, it is kind, and that's what he wants for us. This is not a burdensome thing to do. This is living in rhythm with the Lord and saying yes to the things that he's putting on your in your path. So call us 4 and 5, 260-745-9090, 260-745-9090. Jay, it was so nice to meet you, and go Broncos.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
We're big Peyton Manning fans around here, even though he's no longer with the Colts.
Well, good. You should, because he's a great guy.
He is.
And say hi to Amy for me as well.
All right. Thank you, Jay. Nice to meet you.
All right.
It's 10:34. You're listening to Mid Morning. I'm Lynn Ford. Thanks for being with us today. Amy Lively's Loving Your Neighbor story began with accepting Christ while watching an episode of Little House on the Prairie, walking away from him for 20 years, being drawn back to Christ through the kindness of a group of women, and then pointed toward having a neighborhood Bible study, which was a problem because she didn't know her neighbors. Good morning, Amy Lively, author of How to Love Your Neighbor Without Being Weird.
Oh, good morning, Lynn. I just love listening to my friend Jay. We would both have to just toss in a Go Bucks there because we're both Ohio natives transplanted to Colorado. But I just amen and amen on everything he said.
I love the tagline of your book, Without Being Weird, because you can have that feeling that, you know, because people that aren't followers of Christ, they have a perception of what a believer is. And I think sometimes as believers, we just have this sort of prickly coat on, thinking what people think about us. And it tends to be, they're sort of a weird lot. So I get that. Before you attended the She Speaks conference, where your heart raced when a speaker uttered the words neighborhood Bible study.
Well, and do you know who that speaker was?
No.
Your guest tomorrow, Wendy Blight.
Seriously,
it was her. Love her.
Oh, well, but you had written, that is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you had written in your journal, I'd like to share what I'm learning discerning with other people. Mm-hmm. And you began to see how God really had aligned everything, your revival, your training, your trials, and your passion. But yet, you balked. Why?
I was afraid. I was terrified. I mean, wouldn't you be? I mean,
yeah.
We're not supposed to love them and leap all the hurdles that Jay talked about, you know, the investment of our time and having no margin and not knowing what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But and I had every fear in the book, but they became excuses for me. And the thing about our excuses is they were all true. I didn't have time. I didn't have margin. You know, I was volunteering at church and volunteering at school and working in our business. I didn't have time for that. But for me, I finally realized that was a fear of making sacrifice. And who do I have to model sacrifice for me other than my Savior?
Mm.
But you know what else? That was to take it another step further. And hey, I'm just speaking for myself here. That was a sin of selfishness. That I just didn't want to make the sacrifice to spend the time. I was afraid that I wasn't spiritual enough. I mean, I was still, you know, getting in fights with my husband, and I was still yelling at bad drivers on the road, and I was still, you know, not having my quiet time 30 minutes every day. You know, I just would justify my excuse by saying, mm-hmm. I'm not spiritual enough, but really that was just a fear of humiliation. And really, again, just speaking for myself here, the sin of pride. I mean, I fought with the Lord for so many months until he really showed me who was in charge of my calendar and who was truly the spiritual one who was going to do this for me. He really helped overcome all of my fears and showed me my excuses and just said, let's get on with this, girl.
Yeah. You said fear of not having enough time, of humiliation, mm-hmm. you know, I'm mm-hmm. going to make a fool of myself. Vulnerability, you know, putting yourself out there, fear of rejection,
what?
Fear of comparison, you know, what does my house look like compared to somebody else's?
Yeah,
and just a fear of people. Yeah, yes, Pinterest.
Oh, Pinterest, that'll kill you every time. But you know what? Those are really, that's shame of my past. That's shame of the gospel. That's ingratitude for what God has given me in my home. That's a lack of faith for not believing what God is capable of doing in my neighborhood. And you know, I made my excuses all about me. Christ showed me that this whole number two command to love our neighbors was really all about him. And even more than that, it was all about my neighbors. It was all about the people that were living around me, placed by him so carefully, so intentionally, like chess pieces.
Mm.
All of us put together in the same geographic area with strengths that complement one another's weaknesses, with gifts that fill one another's needs. He really has made this beautiful tapestry, and we miss it. As we pull into the attached garage, we walk into the house, we exercise in line, inside, we play mm-hmm. inside, we eat inside. We're just hiding from these people who so richly bless our lives.
Mm. Can I just say, Amy Lively, in reading your book, How to Love Your Neighbor Without Being Weird, I really liked meeting you. And the fact that you have come to a place where you own yourself because you belong to Christ, you know what you were, and that's what you were, and you mm-hmm. know who you are. And you know what you're becoming. But when you talked about yelling at other drivers, you do say in your book that you especially liked it when they had personalized plates, because then you could yell at them by name or by what they liked.
A bumper sticker. Yes, you could just give them a real shout out. It's real personal, you know, that personal interaction. That's what loving your neighbor is all about, right? Yeah, you know, I definitely know who I am, chief sinner among them all, and it's really just by grace. And Paul says, I'm not going to let God's grace upon me be in vain, mm-hmm. that I'm going to work harder than anybody else because I know what I used to do, you know, what I used to be like, and I know, well, I still fight against being like today, but it is only by the grace of Christ that we have forgiveness, we have love, we have acceptance, and there are people around us just dying. I mean, like literally dying because they don't have love in their life. Loneliness is an epidemic.
Yes.
It has physical manifestations, spiritual manifestations. It makes people have live less, live shorter lives. And we can impact that by simply saying hello and caring about them.
You began with a Bible study, and that is pretty crazy for somebody who was, you know, that's quite the way to jump into knowing and loving your neighbor.
And you know what? That was just for me personally.
Yes.
That was for me personally. That was how God had had led me through his word and given me a desire and an ability to teach and, you know, extroverted to the max. So that worked for me. And if that works for you, I can help you do that. But each of us, whether we're introverts, extroverts, teachers, or maybe we're just bakers or cooks or we can change oil, all of us have a gift and a calling to use in our neighborhoods with people one-on-one right around us.
You make a really interesting point that I hadn't thought of before, but then when you said it, I thought, you know, that thought has crossed my mind before. You say one of the things we might ask ourselves is, doesn't inviting my neighbor to church count?
It does.
Mm-hmm.
It does count. I think sometimes when we try to define neighbor, like the legalist in the Good Samaritan story, sometimes we globalize neighbor and we make it really, really big. We make it everybody in the whole wide world. Like it's the people in Africa. It's the Syrian refugees. It's the charities where we send our contributions. Those are my neighbors. That's loving my neighbors. Doesn't that count? And the answer is yes. That does count. That is loving our neighbor. And then sometimes we minimalize it and we say like, oh, well, I live in the country. I don't have any neighbors. Or, you know, there's just a field across from me. So we either go really, really big or really, really small. But we need to find that area right in the middle. It's everybody who lives around us. And then there are so many different ways to love them. It looks different every single hour depending on what we're doing. And should we invite them to church? Yes, you should, but maybe not first. Maybe that's not your first introduction to your neighbors when you invite them to church. I mean, I compare it in the book to this, like inviting a vegetarian to a barbecue. You just don't know where they are. You don't know what their needs are. I'm the world's biggest fan of church, but it might not always be the right first step into a spiritual conversation with your neighborhood.
Tell us about your neighborhood and your neighbors, Amy.
Well, I just moved. So I'm in a
it's new a new place. Neighborhood.
It is, and I gotta tell you, the Lord has set me in the most beautiful place. First of all, I'm in the middle of the Rocky Mountains, and so I walk out every day and go, they're still there, I can't believe it. But I'm in this place called Buena Vista, Colorado, and tonight, we shut down Main Street, line the street with more than 300 tables. There will be more than 2,400 people coming to community dinner. That's just dinner together on Main Street. Nothing else, no politicians, nobody's selling anything. It's not even a church event. It's just dinner together. And I want to make this the norm across America. Whether it's you know, shutting down your Main Street or whether it's just having a meal, like Jay said, we're all eating at the same time, invite somebody over. So I've just moved here. It's a fantastic community, but I'm meeting the people, like I said, just right on my street. I've got Doug across the street who's recently widowed, who is just met him just a couple times, and he's already offered to help us in any way that we need around our little house. Next door to me, I have young men who all work right in town who are big outdoor sports enthusiasts. I've got a new couple moving in on the other side who are moving here to start a business. I've got highway workers on the other side of them. I've got a family who, the woman is from Poland and who lives right behind me. There's an ice cream shop in my backyard, Lynn. Can you believe it? I mean, wouldn't you like to move here?
Did you meet that person first? Did you make it a point to meet that neighbor first?
I do. I ran right over there. And I've got Tom and Nancy on the other side of them, Norma on the other end, all ages, all stages of life, getting to know, like Jay said, the personal stuff that you don't just make by an observation, that comes by conversation. And then, you know, when I'm in a really small town, your neighborhood becomes more than just your block or your street. You know, you can go a little wider because you run into people at the city market or at the gas station or at church. So we can't get legalistic on this. We just have to have our eyes open mm-hmm. to, it's more than just being nice, like loving your neighbors, more than just smiling at the cashier. It's more than just giving your hairdresser a tract. It's true relationship that comes over time. That's because you care about people and you want to know what's happening in their lives.
We're giving away two copies of How to Love Your Neighbor Without Being Weird. And Amy mentioned she's an extrovert. You can probably pick up on that. But what she does in her book is to say, each of us have our own personality and temperament. Each of us have our own set of giftings. And there's a way for you to do neighboring that is you. And you set us free to do that. We all have the command to love our neighbor. God is going to direct us to some very specifics. And we don't drag our feet on this. We say, I will follow you, Lord, into what you might do. This is a great challenge. I think one of the things, Amy, we really want to grow close to the Lord and know him better. And yes, that happens when we read our Bible. And yes, that happens because we pray. And yes, it happens because we go to Bible study and all those things. But the place where we really meet the Lord is when all of those things come to bear in real life. Mm-hmm. And because I think we recognize our dependence. But the other thing, too, he shows up in places of service. And I'm sure there's a biblical reason for that. But when we're in service, whether it's just conversation or whether it's doing something with and for someone else, in that act of kindness, he's present there. And so this is another way that we experience the God that we love. If you'd like a copy of How to Love Your Neighbor Without Being Weird, callers 4 and 5, 260-745-9090, 260-745-9090. You're listening to Mid-Morning. I'm Lynn Ford. Our guest right now is Amy Lively, How to Love Your Neighbor Without Being Weird. It's published by Bethany House. Amy, let's unpack what could be a misunderstanding about loving your neighbor. We tend to think of it in terms of doing things for somebody else. That can be a part of neighboring, but it is really this sort of broad, large pool that we can jump into.
It is. I had a great conversation with Scott Jones. He's in Long Beach, California, and their organization is called We Love Long Beach. And in one of the biggest cities in the country, they're breaking it down to the neighborhood level. And he used a very interesting phrase that he used in a conversation last week, so I want to give him the credit for that. But the difference between doing things for people and with people. And it's easy to do things for people, and we even want to do things for God, because that's a checklist. That's something that has a beginning and an end, and we can feel accomplished when we do it. But doing things with people is so much different. Just sitting with someone in their sorrow, celebrating with someone in their joy, being with people is what God did for us. God with us, and that's our calling, and that's what loving our neighbor is about. It does come out in doing things for people, taking them a plate of cookies, sending them a card. Those are the inroads, and those are the introductions. And again, it's a both and situation. We do things for people. We do serve people. But just being with them in their lives is the real calling of love your neighbor.
I don't know that you're ever at a loss for conversation, Amy, but for some people, just what do I say? Especially when our neighbor looks different than us, has a different religion, isn't religious at all, from a different country, maybe they don't speak English very well, or we're afraid of saying the wrong thing, so we don't say anything. Give us some direction in that.
Well, we do need to put a little bit of thought into that, because we don't want to drive a wedge between people. We already have these differences, and so we want to ask questions that draw us together, and we want to find out what we have in common with people instead of what we have that's already different. Mm-hmm. I loved watching all the coverage of the Pope coming to the United States, and I'm not Catholic, and so a lot of their ceremonies and rituals were very different than how I worship, but I did find great beauty in them. But I could also see what we have in common is our care for the poor and our concern for families. So find those things we have in common. So with people who maybe have speak differently. We can ask them, what a lovely accent. Where's your accent from? And you know what? That's a little different than just saying, you know, where are you from? Which, you know, could be just a little too personal in some cultures, but just ask about the accent. We can ask, where have you traveled? Where have you been in the United States? How are we different from your country? How's the climate different here? How long have you been here? Do you like it here? Where's your family? And, you know, you might uncover some things of people who are seeking asylum or people who have been refugees or people who have been victimized. And just be sensitive to that. And truly, the Holy Spirit does lead us. And then don't hesitate to ask about celebrations of other faiths. Tell me about the festival or feast that you're celebrating, and acknowledge the things that are important to them in their faith. And again, we're looking for those things that we have in common, like, oh, in my faith, we have a celebration about this time of year as well. And that can be an inroad, but you really have to understand why it's important to them, what it means to them. Don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid of other faiths, because in the end, Christianity, we're the only one who has God with us. We're the only one who has Jesus Christ. We're the only one with grace and salvation. And we can create that longing in other people to know where we get our hope.
Amy, share some of the stories from your book in terms of, you have a chapter that talks about unwrapping your gifts, and so some of the natural gifting that you have, whether it's your spiritual gift or the way that you're wired in terms of just how God created you, those are ways that you might really get to know your neighbors and serve your neighbors. Some great examples of that.
Well, you know, we take these spiritual gift tests online or at church, and then we get plugged into, you know, oh, you're going to work in the nursery because you have the gift for that, or, you know, you have the gift of prayers. You're going to be on the prayer team. But and these gifts are given to build up the church. But we can remember, though, that the church can begin in our neighborhood when people come to know Christ as they come to know us, and then they get drawn into a church. But so these spiritual gifts can be applied every day on the job in our homes and in our communities. So for one is gift of administration. People who are planning our community dinner tonight have the gift of administration, the ability to have a goal and then set all the little steps that make it happen. Well, in your neighborhood, you can do, as Jay suggested, a block party. Or maybe if it's even, you know, that impromptu s'mores party in your backyard, that you could make a neighborhood directory, or you could help start a neighborhood watch. So if that's your gift, there are ways that it can go right into your neighborhood. The gift of exhortation is, you know, you build people up. These are the ones at church where you're just very patiently helping people become more mature in their faith. But at home, you're the one the neighbors come to for comfort. When they have that tragedy, when they have that crisis, when they need that advice, they come to you for exhortation, so you can use it very practically on your front porch.
I love that. And this is a very practical thing. You were having an open house, and you had 89 in the neighborhood, and you didn't have 89 mugs, which could be a reason for not having anything, but when you send the invitation...
Couldn't do it. What if they all came?
Yes. So your invitation includes the line, I'll brew the beans if you'll bring a mug. And that is just, I mean, you didn't plan it that way in terms of the event that wouldn't have enough mugs, but what a great conversation starter. And when you come to somebody's home where you've never been there before, you're bringing something familiar, and those kinds of things are really helpful as icebreakers.
They are. And, you know, my neighbors, when I invited 89 people over for coffee and about 20 of them came, we had a wonderful time, met people who I had never seen before in my life, who just gracefully accepted my invitation. They were as afraid to come to my door as I had been afraid to go to their door. And so... as we pray for our neighbors' hearts to be opened and for them to be receptive to us just as friends, not as freaks and fanatics, just as friends, it was very helpful that I had asked them to bring their own mug, really just out of necessity, but it did turn into an icebreaker. But you know what I found? People want to be useful. They mm-hmm. want to accomplish something. They want to have an impact in their world. And so when we ask them to be part of something bigger, started for me in just this very small sense of bring your mug, but later on in our neighborhood, they brought gifts for a woman having a baby. They brought meals for someone who had had a death in the family. They brought help and service to people who needed care in our neighborhood, but they want to make a difference. And so don't be afraid to ask people to be a part of something bigger, whether you're just bringing, why don't you have a soup party or invite neighbors over for dinner and they say, hey, can we bring anything? And you say, you know, why don't you just bring a couple cans of food and we'll put it together and make a donation to the food pantry? Well, all of a sudden, it goes from this really awkward, mm-hmm. Dinner date to, oh, hey, I am helping out the local food pantry. I like that. I can do that and I'll be a part of that.
I love the idea that you shared in the book about, I forget the individual's name, who did a website just for their, or Facebook page just for their neighborhood where they could put what needs are or who does what. And that was a way of connecting. It's sort of like a newsletter, but it's an online newsletter.
Yeah. We had done this in our neighborhood in Ohio, and lots of neighborhoods have this. And you can also use a website called Nextdoor, which is like an online social neighborhood. But most people are already on Facebook, and, you know, you can set the settings so it's private. Nobody sees what you're posting. And so we're talking about lost dogs, and mm-hmm. does anybody know a great plumber, and planning block parties and gatherings and looking for babysitters and inviting people over for cookouts. So it's great to use modern technology in the online world too, but the goal is to form these offline relationships mm-hmm. and connection points. So it is a great way to meet people and you make those initial friend requests. But keep in mind though that the goal is real relationships. And those can happen online. Mm-hmm. They can have their roots online. They can go deeper online. You can learn about people there.
Amy, how has becoming and being a good neighbor and actually living out the second part of the Great Commandment, how has that impacted your relationship with the Lord? How has it changed it?
Yeah, I don't think we really even understand our relationship with the Lord until we do both halves of the Great Commandment, of love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and strength, and the second is just like it, equally important, love your neighbor as yourself. You know, in my life, I started off by loving God. When I returned to Him, I was all in and I was on fire and I was so passionate. And I needed that time of just soaking in my church and going to every Bible study I could get my hands on and going, you know, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. It was such a sweet, sweet time. But then turning that around and finishing the assignment by loving other people is when you see how what He's given you, it comes out in real life, in mm-hmm. real relationships with other people. That's when you understand what He has done for you, when you begin to do it for other people.
And that flows out of the love He has for you. You don't have to generate that. That is a God-given thing. And so don't think that I'm going to run out of the energy and love to love other people. And sometimes you will get tired because we have human bodies. And sometimes that comes out of the sacrifice that He's asking us to do. But He is empowering it. He's giving you the heart for it. Amy Lively, thank you so much for How to Love Your Neighbor Without Being Weird. Earlier, we talked with Jay Pathak about the art of neighboring, building genuine relationships right outside your door. These are books that I think would be great to read as a group and to discuss them too, because we all live, you know, you may live in the neighborhood with somebody you attend church with, but what a wonderful way to hold each other accountable to this, to be praying for each other, and to be empowered by the Spirit. Thank you for listening today. We're back tomorrow. Stay tuned. Ken's next on Family Friendly and Commercial Free, WBCL.